It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a great panel to talk about the latest Mac news, including a new connector for the iPhone, a little itty-bitty iPad, and those poor Apple Store employees. They're so underpaid. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 305, recorded June 26th, 2012. Buy it in protest. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Sign up for your free 30-day trial today at GoToMeeting.com. Use the promo code MacBreak. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, visit MacBreak.Hover.com and use the offer code MacBreak. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code MacBreak to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Ford. Featuring the My Ford Mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford Mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers the latest news from Apple, iOS, macOS, and anything else OS. Starting with Andy Iannocco on... I was trying to think of something clever, but I could not actually come up with anything clever there. Andy Iannocco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times, the celestial waste of bandwidth, and he has behind him a howling wolf. Is that a three-wheel moon?
No, it isn't. It's Beast of Burden, a really good graphic novel by Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson.
It's good. I like
it. It's great for grown-ups. One of my favorite books. Yeah. Happen to see it in my. I've got a folder for cool things to put on the back. There's yes, great. I meant to do that a few weeks ago. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Hey, we've got a couple of non-regulars with us who I want to make regulars because they're great. First, starting with on the way to the right, Mac OS Ken. Ken Ray is here. It's good to have
How's
you,
going?
Ken. Great to have you back.
Thank you very much, Leo. I appreciate it. I also have a graphic novel behind me, by the way. Actually, a few of them.
So, look at that. Look at that. I can see you want to anything you want to plug.
Anything happens.
Anything particular you'd like? You also have a book about world art.
I do have a book about world art. It's called World Art. Ask for it by name.
And a handbell. You're not one of them guys who plays in a bell ringing crew, are you?
No, I'm not. It's actually surprising, though, the number of bells we have around the house. Don't ask me why. Ask my fiance. I don't know. I don't own one, and yet I can tell you where there are 10.
Let me just ask you, Ken.
Yeah.
When she feeds you, does she ring a bell?
No.
Okay. So it's not operant conditioning.
With that, but no.
No?
Nor have I ever tried, ringing a bell for anything I want.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Because I like her, and I want to stay in the house.
Yeah. If you want to stick around, you might want to learn how to respond to the bell.
Mm.
Salivate appropriately. Also here, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. It's great to have you, Renee.
Oh, it's great to be here, Leo. Thank you.
What is iMore.com?
iMore.com, we're part of Mobile Nation, so Android Central, Crackberry.com. We are the iPhone and iPad-specific site within Mobile Nation.
Thank God. I thought you were going to say you're the Android-specific site, and we got you on the wrong show.
No, not this week.
iPhone 5, iOS 6. In fact, we're going to talk about iOS 6. Ed Moore at iMore. Get it?
And I don't have graphic novels, but I do have the movie versions of the graphic novels. So I hope Andy includes me in the club anyway.
I think that counts. We're all excited about Dark Knight Rising, Batman Rising, whatever you call it. Yeah. All right. So I tell you what I'm excited about, and this is a little self-centered, a little self-serving, but Apple today has released an app for podcasts. We knew that come iOS 6 anyway, they said, or the rumors were they would separate podcasts out of iTunes and give them the ghetto of their very own, just as they did with videos. And that was kind of weird when they did with that with videos. I didn't expect, and all of a sudden my videos were gone, and then I had to go to a separate app. I'm hoping that this won't ghettoize, but will in fact promote podcasts. You can download it now. It's free. It's on iPad and iPhone. It also has radio, which is fantastic.
And I think a nice interface. Boy, I'd sure love it if they would pre-populate it with some great podcasts like Twit. Just saying. I'm just saying. Let's type in Twit in the search and make sure that we show up. But this is, I think this is good, Andy, isn't it? You do podcasts also for 5x5, Vinatko's Almanac.
I mean, you're absolutely right. It's been sort of an awkward marriage between podcasts and the iTunes app and the music player app. The fact that you have to really spread your experience across two different apps really shows you how complicated it and cumbersome it really got to be.
Right.
I mean, if you over to an Android podcaster app or a really great app for iOS called Casts, I kind of switch most of my podcast listening over to this dedicated app because it's just so much simpler to have acquisition and listening and archiving in the exact same app. So, yeah, this is a huge thing.
They now have, the featured podcast and the charts have been moved out. I do think that the nice thing about moving it out of iTunes is also that iTunes said subscribe. It had a button that said subscribe. And there was always that concern because you're buying something.
Yeah.
When you're buying music, that maybe somehow subscribe is going to charge you. So I think, that's a good from our point of view.
Yeah, and also just discovery. I mean, how many times have you your favorite podcast, but then you sort of realize I'm kind of in a rut, and also right. My favorite podcasts haven't been updated today. I want to find something brand new. And so to build a more of a store interface than just the simple, if you know what you're looking for, we'll let you search for it by topic, like it's an SQL database or something. This is clearly a big improvement.
Huge. It looks like they're also doing audio and video, so that's kind of that's kind of nice too.
My favorite, I've only had about 10 minutes to play with it, but my favorite part so far is the fact that you can actually subscribe on your phone.
And on the iPad. That. So now I can, it'll automatically download. This is something that was always missing. You had to sync, which is crazy.
Well, you could explicitly go from a podcast you're already subscribed to that listing in the iTunes app and then select an episode to download and then go back into the iTunes, the music player app. I mean, it's managing subscriptions here is just a great step forward.
This is interesting because they call this top stations and they kind of make it look like it's like a little weird radio dial. Isn't that kind of interesting?
If you start playing a podcast, Leo, then you hit the album art, you'll get a wonderfully skeuomorphic old tape deck playing.
You're kidding.
Rabbit and turtle.
Oh, let me play it. So
it's not puffy leather, but it's close.
So let's subscribe to one of my favorite shows. It's on the radio. And so I start play it.
Yeah, tap the artwork.
You can't. It's a little dark. Let me look at you. It's very dark, but you can see there's turning wheels.
Reel to reel.
Oh my goodness, that is skeuomorphic. And then look, there's a little turtle and a rabbit. That is really cute. I'm kind of glad they did that. It's kind of dark in here for some reason, but maybe my iPad's turned way down. Let's turn it up.
They make the whole thing a giant screen, and their designers are very careful not to give you data-driven apps. They give you something old-world to kind of latch onto, especially if you're a mainstream user. I think it makes a big difference.
It's just really kind of neat. It's something to look at on the iPad because you have a lot of space. It does have AirPlay, which is really great. I presume it has AirPlay for video as well. This is good news. This really takes this non. I don't like the word podcast. We'll say non-traditional media or non-broadcast media, and puts it front and center. If you're interested in this kind of thing, and I do hope that they'll make this part of the build for iOS 6, so you'll get it automatically. I presume they will, just as they have.
I don't think so.
No,
I think it's going to be like iTunes U. I think they're keeping the extra stuff off the phone and letting you download.
I guess that makes sense. So we're just going to have to push everybody to download it, right?
This is very absolutely exciting. The one thing that I wish, and this is such a nitpicking thing. I mean, what's really cool, and I remember you talking about this years ago at that event in Jillian's, like 2007, 2008 maybe, was how Apple sort of adopted podcasts into iTunes, and then mostly seem to forget about it. I mean, there have been a couple of updates to the podcast section of iTunes, but mostly they haven't done a whole lot. It's really exciting to see them do something because once they made themselves the de facto, sort of destination for podcasts for most people, they've kind of left it alone. If you wanted to nitpick, the one thing that I wish is that it was part of the iOS 6, launch when they launched the next iPhone.
Yeah.
Because when we heard that they were going to do their own app for it, I thought that's going to be exciting. There's going to be this whole room of press and they're going to mention podcasts in front of them, and maybe, you know, the parts of the press that have forgotten that podcasts exist will suddenly remember, and, you know, there'll be like a day of stories. But, you know, front and center on the App Store is fantastic. And of course, I mean, name a podcast, or at least a tech podcast, that's not going to be talking about it over the next week. It's really exciting.
There's a reason they didn't.
If you're a podcaster or a podcast listener.
This is great.
I think they're basically using this to kind of prototype their new background downloading service. I mean, we've heard rumors that they're going to be downloading maps, downloading a lot of stuff, almost like PowerNap on Mountain Lion, right, but doing it on iOS when you're not otherwise busy. And that technology is not public facing yet. So I think this is their big test ground for that. And we'll hear about it more with iPhone 5.
You know, we got the message almost a year ago that we should increase the size of the album art. To what was it? I can't remember. Something a lot bigger. And we did. Thank God.
16 by 16? 1600 pixels.
Because look at this poor guy. I don't know, even know who it is. He doesn't have his name on it. It's fuzzy. But Orvis got the message. And if I go back to ours, our stuff really looks nice. It fills that tablet. Uh-oh, we got to do iPad today. Ironically, for some reason, the album art has not been updated on that. But this is nice. I'm very, very happy. Thank you, Apple. You know, I said when iTunes started doing podcasts, I said it's the best thing that happened to podcasting and the worst thing. Because, and it's true, 90% of all podcasts are downloaded via iTunes. I mean, it's just, it dominates. And you live or die by iTunes. So this is huge. This really does help.
What's interesting, and Andy's pointed this out on past shows, is that Apple continues to decouple iTunes on iOS while it's this huge monolith on OS X and on Windows. They're making it increasingly dispersed and decoupled on iOS.
Why are they doing that, you think, Renee?
I think that iTunes on Mac suffers for being iTunes on Windows, and it's just easier for them to bundle everything like Core Animation, Core Audio, make that one big app, and they only have to support one app on Windows. Where on iOS, it's their new OS, their new playground, right, and they can re-architect it.
I want to take a break. We're going to come back when we talk front page of the Sunday Times. I mean, lots of the Times really feels like it's going after Apple somehow. I don't know why. Front page. Apple employees make less than Costco employees. What? Anyway, we're going to talk about that. Are Apple employees just highly paid slaves? But first, a word from Citrix and GoToMeeting. If you are doing online conference calls, online meetings, and I think most of us in business are these days because everybody's spread all out and everything, you got to take a look at the new GoToMeeting. I say new for two reasons. First of all, they've added video. You probably know that. We've talked about that a lot. So HD Faces, they call it. It lets you see the people you're meeting with. So you start a meeting on a PC or a Mac, and you see, you've got the screen sharing. They've always had that, but now you can also see and hear the meeting participants in high-def video, and it's crystal clear. It really looks good. And as you can see in this video that we're showing you from the GoToMeeting site, it works on an iPad. So you have to start the meeting on a desktop, but you can attend a meeting on an iPad, and it uses the camera and the iPad's mic and audio. So it really makes it great to attend a meeting using your iPad. Now, I think if you're using GoToMeeting for sales or training or collaboration, this is a big selling point. Sales especially. You could say to your client, hey, you know, you got an iPad. The app is free. Just download it, and we'll join the meeting. You could send them a calendar invitation. They click the calendar invitation in iCal. It opens GoToMeeting, and they're in the meeting. It could not be easier. You could try it free for 30 days right now. Visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code, I'm sorry, promo code MacBreak. It says promo code on the site, so we want to make sure you use the word promo code right there. Click that link, promo code MacBreak, all one word, and you got 39 days free. That's $49 value. Mac, PC, iPhone, or Android devices, 25 attendees per meeting, and free product training and 24/7 support, all part of that free trial. Host from a Mac or a PC, GoToMeeting.com, use the offer code MacBreak, and we thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. What do you think, Andy? Why did the Times put that in the front page of the Sunday Times? He's disappeared. I think he went to get a job at the Apple store. How about you, OS Ken, Mac OS Ken, Ken Ray?
Yes.
Apple's retail army, long on loyalty but short on pay. Is it a scandal?
No. It's a way, I mean, well, forgive me. I talked about it on Monday's edition of Mac OS Ken briefly. It's a way to sell papers. I mean, they know
front page,
know.
Like,
and what a bunch of, yeah. Okay. Tropical Storm Debbie bearing down on the Gulf Coast. This is what I said Monday. Presidential race in the U.S. First ever democratic election in Egypt. Forest fires in the West. Jerry Sandusky. Ugly, horrible. And I know that story ended on Friday, but there's a chance to have a national dialogue about what happened to those kids. And what above the fold, front page, Sunday edition of the New York Times, is sometimes it sucks to work in retail.
Apple employees make $11.25 an hour. Oh, I am so sorry. Golly.
There was one thing in there that did resonate. But still, Sandusky on Sunday was in sports. And this business story, which I think is what you could call it, or if you wanted to be, you know, if you wanted to be generous, you could call it a technology story. This business story or technology story was on the front page of the New York Times when real things were happening in the world. And I'm not saying that, you know, this is not potentially an issue for Apple retail workers. Although if you read the article and you read some of the follow-ups, like the great piece in 9to5Mac about, you know, their survey of some of Apple retail and their reactions, both in the New York Times piece and just some other questions. I mean, they seem to say, you know, it's a job. I mean, they know what they're getting into.
Yes, I'm sure before they take the job, the manager says, and by the way, you'll be getting $11 an hour. And they say, okay, thank you, because you're not flipping burgers. You're not stocking boxes of toilet paper. You're selling Macs and iPads to a happy bunch of people. You know, there are 40,000 Apple employees, they say in this article, 30,000 of whom work at Apple retail. Now, here's the legitimate point. And I just think it's how well run Apple is. Apple is selling if you divide the retail store revenue by the number of employees, each employee brings Apple $473,000 a year. They're worth that much. Meanwhile, they're getting paid like $30,000 a year. And in typical electronics and appliance stores, it's less than half that per employee.
Apple also has far more employees. I mean, you walk into a Best Buy, you're lucky to find one or two people on the floor. Point. Apple has 30 people.
Good point. You can't go into an Apple store without talking to an employee. You actually cannot enter the door. You immediately are accosted. And they're nice. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. They say, can we help you? Would you like to make an appointment? What are you here for? And in fact, you look at AT&T, they're copying that model now. It's a good model.
And also, if you're comparing their wages to the wages of Costco, you're comparing them to pretty much the gold standard for employee compensation. I don't think there's any retail employee that is treated better or paid better than at Costco, which is why Costco retains employees like nobody's business. That said, you do have to you hope there's at least some sort of a pre-briefing that Apple Store employees go through that starts and ends with the phrase, you do realize you're going to be working in a mall electronics store.
Yeah.
You're not going to be part of the design team working for Johnny Ive on the iPhone 7. Because sometimes there is a certain rate of burnout in Apple Store employees. And sometimes there is that disconnect between the idea that it's a great place to work. The store is run very, very well. You're going to be supported extremely well by management when you need to make decisions to satisfy customers. But at the end of the day, you are a retail employee at a mall electronics store. And if you lose sight of that and you start thinking that you're part of the Apple dream, that's going to lead to heartbreak within 6 to 9 weeks.
It's funny. Every person I've ever met who works in an Apple store, the way they introduce themselves is, I work for Apple.
Yeah.
It is. I don't care. It's still a prestigious job. By the way, Apple's response to this article was to give a raise to its employees. They won't say how much, but the Times reports that a salesman at the San Francisco flagship store and vocal labor activist said he was given a raise of $2.82 an hour to $17.31 an hour.
They planned that before the Times story. It wasn't a response.
Yeah,
it was in the works for a while.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
This is like when the Times ran its story, you know, about the Far East supply chain after Apple had already joined the FLA.
Right.
Yeah. Right? And there seemed to be a certain amount of, well, now the New York Times has shed this light on this. Well, I mean, I remember reading my first story about how bad, you know, things were at Foxconn in 2006, I believe. Or actually doing my first story on macOS Ken about that in 2006. And I'm sure they were bad at Foxconn before that. I mean, the New York Times did not change Apple's, I mean, maybe they're prodding. I mean, and certainly you can say that looking into it overall does that, but it's kind of weird that like they ran their expose on the Far East supply chain right after Apple had said that, and they ran their the plans for giving the raises and the meetings that were had this weekend. Those were rumored a couple of weeks ago before this.
They're chasing news and not breaking it. And to Ken's point, the title does not match the article. If you read the title, it sounds far more link-baity than the actual article. And that's my problem with the entire iEconomy series, is that the packaging they are using does a disservice to the material, which has social and cultural value that they are trying to push forward.
There's one other thing that we're skipping over the same way the New York Times article skipped over it. I mean, Andy, you're right. They're working at an electronics dealer in the mall. There's one article that says, but the benefits and the 401k are great.
Yeah.
And it's right at the beginning. And I don't remember having a 20-something job where I could say, you know, that those were actually two things that were really great about my job.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I happened to I was at TEDx Boston last week, and happened to be waiting in a group with a bunch of Apple Store employees and talked to them about it. And they're telling me that they did get a raise that was larger than they were expecting, but it was like a raise that was pretty much on schedule and on track. And you know, most people that I know at the Apple Store do have their feet on the ground that way. I mean, I agree, it's a non-story. You never there's so many. I've been in or adjacent to meetings where a newspaper discusses what goes on the front page, and there's so many different factors that go into it. There is a great deal of motivation to get a headline that's going to make people want to pick up the paper and read it. But so much of it comes down to, well, what did we play up yesterday? What story is on the way up? What story is on the way down? What story is going to help us to get eyeballs on other related stories that we've got in play right now? So I wouldn't necessarily guess as to the New York Times' motives, but yeah, I think it's a front page story for a Sunday paper. It's not a front page story for a Monday or Tuesday and Wednesday paper.
I used to write for magazines 10 years ago. I wrote for martial arts magazines, and they would say plainly that a magazine with Bruce Lee on the cover would sell 10 times the copies of anything else. And Apple now is the equivalent of Bruce Lee on the cover. They get so much attention. They get so much free marketing, so much free discussion, that the equal and opposite negative reaction to that is they put up with stories like this.
Yeah.
So next Sunday's New York Times will be, where would Bruce Lee be today?
Working at an Apple store.
I just feel like if you don't like it, get a different job. With unemployment, especially among young people, so high, I think people are probably fairly happy to have this job. It's more than minimum wage, a lot more.
Especially the specialists and geniuses get a lot more, and they say that in the article too.
And admittedly, it's a stressful job. I mean, of course it's stressful. You go in the Apple store, it's crazy busy. I'm sure they work hard. They work long hours. Is Apple – now, here's the question, and I think this would be more to the point. I don't see any of this in the article. Is Apple requiring them to work more hours than they're paid for? You know, some retail places like Nordstrom, you stick around afterwards, you write thank you notes, and, you know, off the clock. I mean, if Apple's doing something like that, then I'd like to hear about it.
There was a mention in the article about somebody trying to bring a class action lawsuit, and they were unable to bring a class action lawsuit about whether or not the employees actually got the breaks that they were entitled to. And so there was a lawyer quoted, and I can't remember who he was, who said that he was able to get a good settlement for 10 of his plaintiffs.
Hmm.
So, they kind of mentioned that, but not really. There's one other thing to
that sounds like
Apple
innuendo,
right now,
by the way. That does not sound like a very hard fact. That's a disappointing innuendo from the nation's newspaper of record.
All the news, there's one other thing to keep in mind about Apple retail right now, though. It's in transition. I mean, they don't have Ron Johnson anymore. They do have John Browett. Who knows what he's going to do with it or what it's going to be like? But to talk about it right now is like saying, well, that ship's crooked. You know, when it's in a turn. I mean, there is the potential that it's going to change quite a bit.
That's a good line. I like it.
We don't really know yet. Thank you. I mean, I was scared, honestly, when they said that the guy from Curry's and PC World and Dixon's was going to be taking over Apple retail. But everything that we've heard about what he's done with retail employees so far. Now, I don't work for Apple retail, obviously, so I can't say from the inside. But all the articles that we're getting coming out of it really sound like he's taking a keen interest in Apple retail employees. And again, that was also a very small part. I mean, what the Times piece is looking at is years, and that's what they've got. They've got the history, right? But I mean, they're and I'm not looking for a fluff piece on Browett. I guess though, if they're going to do an assassination piece, maybe they talk about, well, maybe here's one reason that it shouldn't die, or here's, you know, here's a bit on why these things, you know, might change or might be different going forward.
Look, I worked at McDonald's when I was that age. There are bad jobs for $5 an hour. It was less than that. It was $3.50 an hour. There are bad jobs. When you're young, you're starting out. And I don't think working in an Apple store is on the level of bad jobs that there are. There are bad jobs. You could be laying road, you know, asphalt. You could be working on a roof. You could be working at Walmart for $9 an hour. Chad, you could be Chad, for Christ's sake.
You could work a twit. Ugh.
This guy, this poor guy, I pay you, what, $3 an hour, no benefits, and he works 12 hours a day, I pay him for eight. That is a bad job.
Times expose Sunday on Leo Laporte.
I mean, I it's just normal that, you know, that when you're young and starting out, you have bad jobs. It seems to me a little whiny, and it's a little disappointing that the New York Times has run yet another hit piece as if Apple, I mean, there are far worse employers in America. Look at Walmart. They even mentioned this. I mean, come on. Walmart doesn't give you benefits. It's $8 an hour. All right. All right. I don't want to defend Apple if they're indefensible, but this seems like a hit piece to me.
But that's the problem. The New York Times is making people defend Apple when there could actually be issues with profit sharing and how the company is run and how retail is run. And that's the only issue with how the New York Times is treating this.
9to5 Mac had a Q&A. Retail employees respond to New York Times profile. Share life inside the Apple store. I think this is a good place to go. Read the Q&A from a 9to5 Mac. That's real Apple employees talking. And presumably kind of a good random sampling, not just cheerleaders or whatever.
That's very fair.
It's also, by the way, pretty positive. You know, it's things like, my experience is fun, challenging, emotionally and mentally rewarding. This is another response. I've met the most impactful people of my life while working for Apple and formed many ongoing friendships. Working at Apple's brought me friends I would not otherwise have known. I mean, it's like, you know, this is a good first job, I think. And I don't think these people are, you know, 40-year-olds for the most part. They're kids. They're 20-somethings.
And it doesn't look bad on a resume.
Yeah, that was the other thing that they kept saying. And, I mean, they did actually mention that in the New York Times piece. It's weird because the New York Times piece does seem very slanted against Apple, or at least against the way Apple has treated its retail employees. But, I mean, you do have people saying in it, yeah, you know, I have 3 years of Apple under my belt. And even though it's retail, what people see is Apple. Right. And they're impressed that they got in, they're impressed that they were able to stay, and then they're able to go on and make more money.
I think that's true.
I mean, it's a much, like you said, it's a much better for, how did that McDonald's stint do for you, Leo, on your resume? I mean,
resume, but I learned to work at McDonald's. I mean, that was a good first job for me. One of the things I learned is you're always doing something. You're always working. You're always tidying up. You're cleaning. You're doing something. I learned to be responsible. It was actually a great first job. I was from 16 to 18, something like that. And it was a very good first job. And I came home smelling like grease and exhausted. And I, you know, I learned to hate people. But and I gained about 40 pounds because I kept eating those damn Big Macs. But other than that,
I wasn't knocking the job at McDonald's.
It was a good job.
Difficult work, right? But it's not something that you put on your resume necessarily thinking, well, this is going to get me in the door.
No, it didn't.
And what both the 9to5 Mac piece and the New York Times piece had Apple retail employees or former Apple retail employees saying was, yeah, this looks great on my resume. Maybe I didn't enjoy it every day. Maybe I should have made more money. And of course, I mean, ideally, you want everybody to make more money. I mean, that's... But it's not like the Walmart thing. It's not like the, you know, $8 an hour and you get no benefits, or you get no benefits for the first year, or, you know,
there are a lot of worse jobs is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I bet you most of the people who get jobs at Apple stores are happy to be there for a couple of years. It's not a career. You're happy to be there for a few years and you move on. It's like working at Twit. I swear to God, it's exactly the same. Why do you think I hire young people? No sane adult would work here.
Same amount of Apple equipment in this work too.
I got some volunteers. Hey, one good thing about the New York Times, they're going to bring, starting Thursday, the entire paper to the flipboard and the paywall too, by the way. You still have to be a paying subscriber. But as I subscribe to the New York Times. I didn't call them up saying, I'm canceling my subscription. I still like it, and I love the idea that I'll be able to read it on Flipboard. It's interesting, though, because it sounds as if almost The Times is saying our digital strategy as a standalone app didn't work. Maybe Flipboard is the right thing to do. Is that what they're saying, Andy?
I think it's more of a case of them saying we want eyeballs wherever they are. And given that Flipboard has become one of the most dominant media apps on the iPad, which is the dominant e-reader device on the market right now, it makes sense for them to do that. Also, Flipboard has done a really great job of making their platform accessible to other magazines, as everybody
and
here
audio.
Knows. Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing start to finish. You have a site like Boing Boing or a publication like Wired who wants to take the effort to make a better reading experience for Flipboard users. It doesn't take a whole lot of work on their own end to make that happen, and suddenly increases the value of Flipboard, increases the value of the magazine. So this is just nothing but a win-win for the New York Times. They're investing a hell of a lot of money in new media right now. I was told about a software product that they put a like 7-figure budget into, but then had a sort of can when the iPad came out because they were planning on different forms of digital distribution. Some of them key to custom hardware, some of them key to a different content platform so they could redeploy it wherever they wanted to. And it's impressive that they took that big of a gamble. Also impressive that they flushed that amount of money away. If that story is true, the source is pretty good, but I didn't actually get to see the actual thing. So it doesn't surprise me that this is just another extension of a larger policy of wherever the eyeballs are, we want to make sure that they can land on a copy of the New York Times. Too bad about the paywall, but
They actually, you're exactly right. They call it NYT everywhere. It's their digital strategy. And that makes sense. I think that was always our strategy. But, you know, why not be everywhere your readers or listeners or viewers want to see you?
What's interesting with them is they're moving the paywall with it. It's almost like the cable companies who would rather not have a TV channel app on the iPad. They would rather you log in with your cable company ID. They want the exposure, but they don't want to lose the traditional cash system that's attached to it.
Well, actually, in the case of HBO, I think it's because they have to. I think they would love to sell it to you directly, but they can't.
There are a lot of complications there. Among them, it really works well for HBO to make that available through Verizon, through Comcast, because that way Verizon and Comcast are responsible for piping that content to the user. Whereas if HBO were to detach that, now they have to figure out who are they going to subcontract that job to, how are they going to make it reliable, do they really want that kind of trouble, all for the interests of hoping to build a brand new business that within 5 to 10 years would only poison their immediate relationships with existing cable companies. The New York, it's a complicated issue on the best way for newspapers to get people to pay for their content. New York Times is in a position where they can actually make a strategy like this work. There really is only one New York Times, just like there really is only one Wall Street Journal. They don't have the same problems that a Boston Globe or a Seattle Pie or a Chicago Sun-Times would have, where if the Sun-Times went exclusively behind a paywall, well, who cares? There are a million other places they can get not the same content, not the same sort of stellar, wonderful, well-researched, Pulitzer Prize-winning content, including commentators such as the world-renowned Roger Ebert and the slightly less renowned Andy Notko. but you know what I mean. Yeah. New York Times is pursuing this because it's a viable idea for them. And I think actually, I mean, in an absolutely perfect world, the newspaper business with complete foresight would have probably been better suited if they said we would rather create a distinction between the sort of content that's created on the web for free versus the sort of stuff that we want to ask you to pay for. I think that they made sort of a structural problem by saying that everything that's on the web is just as good as everything else on the web, and that really isn't actually true. There's no other answer they could have made. I mean, I'm not saying that they should have done that to begin with, but I don't really think that the New York Times is necessarily backwards by putting everything behind a paywall.
It's really a big victory for Flipboard. Flipboard recently added audio from NPR. They added Google Plus, because really initially Flipboard was Twitter's feeds, kind of magazinified, and now it's got Google Plus. It's got actual magazines. I look at what the New Yorker's doing. The New Yorker's free, but it's the same basic content, not from their Twitter feed, but as on their webpage, and you can see it's branded and everything. And then,
what does that say about Newsstand, Lee? Are you not going to go to Newsstand anymore and just go directly to Flipboard?
That's how I do it. I don't even go, you know, that's how I read Tech Meme. I don't even go to the web anymore, you know. And And I think what it does is it changes. And yeah, Flipboard on the iPhone, and Andy's showing it on Android. That's the Samsung Galaxy S3. And it's a, it's just, by the way, on Android, it's exactly the same incredible experience. It's really nice.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Of course, they're still having a wait and see attitude. They're still having a wait and see attitude on moving to Android tablets. But once they make that transition, boy, that'll be a big step.
And I've set it up so that I can now. It's this is kind of now getting a little weird because I used to be able to on Flipboard retweet, and I have a special. What I set it up is a special Twitter account, links for twit, links underscore four underscore twit, and by retweeting it, it would then be sucked up by Pinboard, which is our bookmarking app, and shared, and it would become part of our rundown. So that's a nice workflow for me. But it's interesting because if and this is a little disappointing. If you go to Google Plus, they I guess it makes sense. They don't have a retweet button on Google Plus. They have a Google Plus One button. So I can no longer – it broke my workflow. And I hope Flipboard doesn't do that where they reach out to these publishers and then the publishers customize Flipboard in such a way that it's really not the same experience on all the tiles. That will be a little disappointing. That
Google Plus is in there when they have a Google Currents product as well on iOS.
Yeah, this Current is their kind of fake Flipboard.
Yeah.
This Flipboard, I think, is this with the New York Times now. I mean, I think these changes make Flipboard the app to beat at this point. They are the kind of the iPhone of news reading apps, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So the question just becomes, who's going to buy them?
Yeah, that's interesting, and there've been a lot of rumors about that.
But they would be in a really bad position to. I'm sorry, it would be a really stupid move for them to be bought out, given that they're one of those few startups where they have a terribly viable business on their hands, given that they are the printing presses for that every single that a publication as prestigious as the New York Times is clamoring to work with. It seems as though the smartest thing to do to make sure that they don't get they don't get screwed is to make sure that they get to control their own destiny.
Yeah,
I think
I agree. But when somebody comes along with $100 million or billion.
Okay.
Dollars.
The crazy stupid money. They'd be crazy stupid to turn it down. But didn't we all read that really cool article about what happened to Flickr after it was absorbed by Yahoo and suddenly had to become an arm that supported the interests of Yahoo instead of growing to be the Instagram of all mobile users. So I could just see a million different ways in which Flipboard would absolutely die if it were ever purchased by Google or purchased by somebody else.
Well, you already see that with the Google Plus integration.
You could also see a bunch of old media saying, no, seriously, this is where it's going. We need to buy it. I mean, couldn't you? I mean, there are plenty of ways that they could screw it up when it's done. But I mean, at the beginning, they say, hot and we've got this much money.
I'm sure Mike McHugh is fighting off offers all the time right now. The guy, the founder of Flipboard.
But how many media companies would be willing to use Flipboard? Could use Flipboard successfully for their own specific uses? They certainly wouldn't want you to. A competing wire service or computing communication service would not want Flipboard to help out New York Times. Would not want Flipboard to help out non-Clear Channel outlets.
Right.
And I think Flipboard would be smart enough to say, unless there was that crazy stupid offer,
but there will be.
We would much rather take $5 off of every single human being on the planet than take $1,000 from 10 people who probably are not going to be good for that money 8 months from now. And that's the state of many conglomerated communications companies.
If Facebook would pay $1 billion for Instagram.
See, that's what I was going to say.
How much is Flipboard worth, you know?
I'm not arguing that it's a good idea. I'm not arguing that it would be good for Flipboard or for the consumers. I'm saying there's a lot of dumb money out there.
Yeah, and this is one that's pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. What I'm just going to say is Flipboard celebrates the best of the app economy. If you do an app that is beautiful, that is elegant, that really redefines the user interface, and initially Flipboard did not have content relationships, they just kind of said, we're going to do it. And very quickly they developed these relationships. It was that or die because, of course, they're scraping Twitter initially. But it was so gorgeous, and it just shows if you have a great idea and you can execute. Path is another example. You can execute well. There is no entrenched interest that you can't beat. I mean, what happened to Zinio and all these let's not say great, incumbent magazine racks that could have done it and didn't?
Yeah. Well, also you have to make so many smart decisions early on. I was talking to the developers of it like the week before it was released for a story, and they were very, very clear about how they felt as though the entire system would absolutely fail if they made enemies out of content providers. They needed to be able to have that face-to-face discussion with every single blogger, every single commercial website too, and say, no, we're going to help you get eyeballs to your articles. And that's why it doesn't scrape any content whatsoever. It'll grab the first paragraph and a half, but the whole point of it is to feed the reader all the way back into the original web page, so that they will get those ad impressions, they will get the Google hits that they need. And I haven't been talking to there's a lot of debate about how much the Flipboard effect is helping all these different sites, but I don't know any commercial operator who isn't very, very grateful for all the traffic that Flipboard brings them. So that was an absolutely critical hit for them to make.
And it can be done wrong. I remember Readability that collected money.
Yeah.
In fact, I paid them money because I thought, oh, well, this is good. Because the idea was Readability, which is like Instapaper or Read It Later, it was a place you would send articles to read later in a nice form, magazine style. And they asked for money, and they said, we'll give it to the authors. And they pissed John Gruber off. They pissed all these authors off because Gruber said, they're collecting money for me. They didn't ask me. They're not giving it to
me. Forced agency.
Yeah, forced agency. So there, it shows you can do it wrong. Meanwhile, Marco Arment is beloved by publishers because Instapaper does it better, I guess, does it right. I don't know.
Well, there's still people who are upset with him because it's not a scraper per se. It's just a different kind of web browser, but it does make it harder for webmasters web operators to track what's happening.
Yeah, that's where you're right. Flipboard did it knew that this was an issue.
Yep. And I do think Instapaper does it in a harmless way. I mean, it's such a great idea for an app that you kind of have to do it.
Right.
And there's no way getting around that kind of problem.
Right.
And honestly, if you are upset with the idea of the content of your website being viewed by an alternative browser that might strip out the ads, you're gonna have to invest in different infrastructure that makes that harder to do.
And it's interesting that you have Instapaper and you have Pocket and you have Readability, but Flipboard has really differentiated itself. It's by itself. There's no none of the immediate competitors are competitive at this point.
But there are. I mean, look, as you said, Current, which is Google Plus's response. There's Pulse, but none of them have the UI. That's the thing. The UI is what wins.
In addition to the UI, they hired a fantastic designer to make sure that it looked like a magazine. It looked like e-text. That's what everybody went gaga over when they first saw it. This wasn't just an RSS feed. This wasn't just Google Reader with some better fonts. If you hired some person to actually lay out these articles into a magazine format, they would probably give you something that was very, very similar, if not identical, to what you got with Flipboard. So many basic decisions that were spot on that made this the success that it is. It's all in the details.
Even the flipping is delightful. I mean, they have a great user experience. The performance is fantastic.
That's a good word, delightful. If you can make an app that is delightful, you got something. Instagram was delightful, immediately delightful. Like you go, ooh, I feel good.
And you want to do it again.
Yeah, I want to do it again. That's right.
I got to ask a question to see if I'm the only idiot here. Sometimes when you're reading a real magazine, you'll be turning a page, but you might spot something on the page you didn't see like before you started turning it, so you sort of turn your head to see it. Sometimes I do that with Flipboard too. I'll start turning the page, then I'll see a tweet, and well, actually, even though it makes no sense, I'll cock my head like this as though I'm actually physically turning a page. That's how well designed this app is.
Bingo. And JC Calhoun is saying in our chat room, I thought skeuomorphism was bad. I don't think Flipboard's skeuomorphic at all. If you had stitching, leather, and a page turn, maybe there's not a page turn on this. There's no fake skeuomorphism.
This stuff is all very deliberate. I mean, they want to move you through the application.
It's digital.
In a very specific way. Yeah,
it's really authentic. It's and that's why it works. It's native to digital. You can't do this in paper. It's native. That's what you want. And by the way, Andy, I think you'll agree, it really is nice on Android. I think that there was an exclusive with the Galaxy S3 initially. But I do believe you can get this now for all Android phones.
Yeah, it's released for everything.
It's just the same. In fact, in some ways, I like the iPhone Android up flip a little bit better. It just seems more. It's something about it. It just fits that. Again, it's native to the platform. Really nicely done. Really, really well done. And look what I found on Flipboard. Woman hit with milkshake loses $2,000. Now, this is not a Mac story, but this is a great story. A woman who was struck with a milkshake, a bunch of teenagers drove by, threw a milkshake at her. She threw her handbag at them. It flew in the window, and they drove off. She had $2,000 in it. The alligator skin purse and the money is gone.
Well, that was rather impetuous, wouldn't you agree?
They threw a milkshake at her, so she threw a purse at them. It flies in the window. They go, and they got it. I'm sorry. Let's take a break. I shouldn't laugh. But who carries $2,000 in their alligator skin purse after all? But they shouldn't have thrown. Kids, don't throw milkshakes at your elders. They've been watching too much Glee or something. Hey, I've been doing it slowly. It's bit by bit. I finally got all our stuff off of that other domain registrar. You know, it was like pulling teeth, literally, because they lock you in and you're going to wrench it out of them. I finally got all the domains moved over to hover.com. This is domain registration. Refreshing. Refreshing domain. Done right. It's smooth. It's easy. It's elegant. They don't upsell you. In fact, you know, one of the things most of the other registrars, you know, you buy the thing. Oh, it's only $8. By the way, you know everybody could see your address on the internet. Would you like to buy privacy? No, Hover, it's all part of it. You get the privacy. You get the domain management. They're not upselling because they don't sell web hosting. They sell domain name registration. I want you to try Hover. Oh, they've redesigned the site. Look at that. Hover.com. A very nice transfer process, by the way. I wish I had done their concierge service. You could transfer them by hand if you want. That's what I did. Or for, I think it's $25, they'll transfer all your domains for you. Although, my sense is if you call this number in the upper right-hand corner, 866-731-6556, if you call that number and say, hey, Leo said you'd help me transfer my domains, they'll do it for free. They have been doing that. I should not make offers for them. Now, you do pay $10 for transferring the domain, but you get an additional year for the $10, so it's a good deal. And, of course, all the existing time left. So if you know, if you've got half a year left, you get a year and a half for $10. That's a great deal. And you get the domain valet service. You get the one-year domain registration. You get the domain management tools, the no-wait telephone support. If you reach them during regular business hours, and once you get online, they will finish the call. They won't transfer you over to somebody or put you on hold. They now have domains in addition to the .com, .net, .co, .ca, .org. They've got a number of country-specific ones like .it. We really tried to get tw.it, but they won't do a two-letter, unfortunately. They've got .asia, .es, .us, .de, .pro. I like that. Leo.pro. I like that. Somebody's probably got it. XXX. What could I put on a domain? Leo.XXX. .tv. I want you to visit hover.com. And by the way, when you go to macbreak.hover.com and when you register your domain, use the offer code MacBreak. You'll get 10% off your first purchase at hover.com. I'm a big fan. It's just clean. It's just simple. It's just straightforward from the folks at Two Cows who have kind of taken it as their mission to take these difficult environments like cell phones and domain registration and just make it clean, easy, straightforward. MacBreak.hover.com. Try it today. And don't forget to use the offer code MacBreak to save 10%. So Apple bought Chomp, right? Which was a app recommendation service. Apparently they've incorporated... Somebody explain this to me. Renee, can you explain? Did they incorporate it into this search? Because developers are saying the search results are better now.
Yeah, we don't know if it's actually Chomp technology they're using, but they seem to have changed the algorithm. Before, it was weighted heavily on what the title of the app was and what the keywords were. So even if it wasn't really relevant to your search, if you were looking for an app, you might get a game just because the same title was in
right.
there. And now it seems to be weighing the number of downloads, the ratings, perhaps a greater stretch of factors in presenting apps to you when you search for them.
Good. Well, TechCrunch quotes Ben San, who has Best Parking app. He said suddenly he's at the top of searches, including things like Chicago parking, D.C. parking, SF parking. And he's ranking ahead of other apps with names that match more closely. So he thinks Apple's now putting emphasis on downloads. So the more downloads you have, the more likely you'll show up in an appropriate search.
It's more contextually aware. If you're looking for Chicago parking, it guesses that you're not looking for a game that just has parking in the title.
Thank God.
Yeah, absolutely.
And apparently this is what Chomp did. According to Chomp's description, quote, Chomp's proprietary algorithm learns the functions and topics of apps. So you can search based on what apps do, not what they're called. Apple has not commented on this. As usual, they don't want anybody.
That's a big deal, because before it was entirely based on the name, and now it is more based on the function of what the app actually does.
Right.
And that'll be huge for example, my mom or my sister trying to navigate the 600,000 apps on the store.
Yeah, it wasn't very good before, was it? In fact, it was still, you could search for something that's on the store and it wouldn't show up at all. I don't know why that was, or still is.
And new apps take a while to propagate, like the podcast app. Whenever a new app comes out, it takes a while before it seems to hit the search engine. But even so, it was hard to find Apple apps on occasion, which is kind of stupefying.
Right.
I have one question. I don't know if anybody knows yet because it's so new, but where you're saying it's weighted pretty heavily on ratings and on downloads, what does this do for discoverability? I mean, is there anything sort of, and I'm not looking for a reason to, you know, beat up on Apple or beat up on the App Store or anything like that, but it almost feels like it gets a little bit harder now, because if the one trick that you had was coming up with a cool name or a name that was, you know, really going to say to people what it is, if that trick doesn't work anymore, then I mean, what does that do for discoverability going forward?
Right.
You know, like a breakthrough app, how do you break through into when there's a lot of entrenched incumbents? Makes it definitely harder. It's discoverably different. It'll be hard to tell if it's better or worse until we've used it for a while and a lot of people hammer on it. But absolutely, before, if you had like the name, Read It Later would show up because it's a very apt name. But now it's going to weigh a lot of factors. And I think the breakthrough apps will have a harder time.
I just got Leo.pro. Oh, I'm sorry. Ken Ray is here from Mac OS Ken. It's macosken.com. His great podcast. Somebody got Leo Pro in between the time the chat room told me. You guys, you're too fast for me. I can get lelmo.com for $1,500. Why would I want Lelmo? Lelmo.com.
Leo's MacBook.pro.
Now we got it. TechLeo.pro is available. LeoHost.pro. Leo.
Well, it was when they put that screen up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all gone now, right? How about FireLeo.pro? Chad?
How much is that? $15?
We need a 5-minute domain registration delay on the feed.
Yeah, really? Oy, oy, oy. Here's a rumor from CNET. 3 iPad model lineup could cut entry price to $299. I don't. This is Josh Lowenson writing in CNET. This is from January. Who sent me this? Get out of here. That's old news.
I think it's come up again because of the rumored Nexus tablet for $200 that's going to probably be announced this
week. I don't think Renee Apple wants to chase that down to the bottom.
I did not believe it, but we have a really, really good source that is saying Apple has a 7-inch iPad ready to go, $200 to $250, and they're likely to release it in October.
Really?
Yes. Like an iPad mini market.
It wouldn't just be the Nexus. It would be, you know, Google's rumored to be releasing, and I think it's a pretty good, pretty accurate rumor, a tablet built by, was it Asus or Acer?
Yes.
Asus.
A 7-inch tablet built by Asus. They showed it at earlier this year, and then it disappeared magically.
Yeah.
At Google I.O., we will know. We're going to do live coverage of Google I.O. 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 Eastern time on Wednesday. And Gina Trapani will be there, so maybe she'll come back with one of those. Because usually they do that. They put them under the seat or something.
Yeah. No, but I agree. It's It depends on how firmly you believe in the canard that Apple doesn't care about the competition. They only care about what making awesome products that are best for Apple. I think that's absolutely true, but I think they also realize that the only leverage that any other tablet manufacturer has is a 7-inch tablet that costs a lot less money.
Right.
I think they would do it not even just to slam the door on the competition, but also because the fact that these tablets are so popular truly demonstrates that consumers want this sort of device. If they're making any sort of a vote about what they don't like about the iPad, they're voting that it kind of stinks to have this device that, as wonderful as it is, makes me carry around a special little bag for it. They also, I've had iPads for over 2 years now, and I'm still at a loss to explain in one sentence what it is that an iPad does. So people are defining 7-inch Android tablets as these are little media devices that are relatively affordable relative to a notebook computer that allow me to read books, surf the web, get email, run some nice apps, and play some games. It's not there to challenge any desktop OS I have, but it certainly has its interesting niche. So Apple could certainly be looking at the sales figures on the Kindle Fire and say that maybe this is something that maybe we're leaving money on the table by not catering to this market. I think that they'd be smart enough, though, not to call it an iPad Mini. I think they would actually call it an iPad Touch Maxim or Pro Maximum.
Well, interestingly, As soon as we heard the story, we asked about the iPod Touch because it hasn't really been updated in quite a while. And they said, no, the iPod Touch is staying. This is mostly just to take the air out of the lower end market, what Andy said. It's exactly like the original iPod Mini or iPod Nano.
iPod Magnum for the extra.
Wait a minute. So you're saying, forgive me, you're saying on the marketing side then they wouldn't put it in the touch line? Because I'm kind of with Andy on that. I mean, Steve Jobs so famously hated, you know, all that stuff. And I know it's Tim Cook's company. I know it's not Steve Jobs anymore. But if you want to freak people out, make a 7-inch iPad that, you know, Steve Jobs said everybody would hate. Whereas on the other hand, I mean, I don't think anybody's really going to be fooled. A 7-inch iPod Touch would be a 7-inch iPad in a lot of ways.
Steve Jobs also said no one wants video on an iPod. He said they're never going to make a phone. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can take what Steve Jobs says literally. It's more he's a marketing expert. He's giving you answers that are good for Apple.
I don't know.
I'll post the link in the chat room because we went over the reasons that we heard as to why they're doing it. Like I said, I was not a believer, but after listening, and we checked it a couple times over, it made sense. And it's exactly like the other iPad, just smaller, which does bring up issues about touch targets and, you know, how apps are designed, but it solves a lot of the compatibility problems at the same time.
You know, this is exactly the kind of thing that Apple would do, and all of the quibbles and all the things Steve said, everything would be immediately forgotten, and people go, "Oh, it's so cute! Oh, I gotta have that! I bet you it would sell to iPad owners." Seriously,
if I see anybody in a coffee shop with an iPad and a mini iPad, I gotta check their watch for like the iPad Nano watch, and I want to see what tattoos they have, because that's I mean, it's one thing to say that I bought an iPad 3 and I still have my first iPad, and sometimes it's cool to have two screens. Okay, I do that all the time too, but anybody who has original iPad who has a 7-incher, that's kind of an odd choice. I think
it's so cute though, and you can keep it in your pocket.
Finally an iPad for my dog.
If you walk into
an airplane and you see people with iPads and a few people with Kindles and smaller tablets, Apple wants their money too.
Well, there's not been a lot of evidence that anybody else is buying these things. The Kindle Fire is the only one that's selling, and we don't know numbers, but it seems to be.
It's selling well, but and when you see people with ebook readers, I mean, you're absolutely right. You see millions and millions of Kindles out there, even the standard e-ink versions of them. So if you tell people that for just $100 more than this $99 Kindle Touch, you can have an actual iPad that runs iOS software, a lot of people are going to find that extra $100.
That's the same way that tablet
PC didn't sell before the iPad. You know, I think the iPad Mini would redefine sales for lower-end tablets.
See, but that's why, and this is just conjecture on my part. I acknowledge that. I just wonder if Apple would want to use the iPad brand on such a device. I think that if they were to make a 7-inch tablet, they would be very explicitly positioning it as an entertainment device, as a content device. And I think that the commercials for the for a 7-inch iPad would be all about reading and all about games and all about things. And the 7-inch version of Flipboard, it wouldn't be about drawing things on it. It wouldn't be about wouldn't be about editing keynote presentations. I just wonder, and I put it more strongly than that. I wonder if they wouldn't rather simply underscore that position by saying it's an iPod. It's the best iPod we've ever made, because just as the realm of the iPad has grown, so has the screen of the iPad iPod.
Here's a really interesting report from Fortune. Thanks, Ron, in the chat room for passing us away along. According to Philip Elmer DeWitt, writing in Fortune magazine, Apple's iPhone is no longer Verizon's best-selling phone. Mm.
That's been already contradicted, though. They had another analyst come forward and say, no, wait, it's still the number one selling phone on Verizon. So it's a bit of an analyst fist fight at the moment.
Yeah, Canaccord's Michael Walkley told Apple Insider, no, I don't believe it. However, Walkley based his comments on checks conducted in April and May, and Dorad LA covers June, and that is what they're basing it on.
Isn't it incredible that a phone from 2011 running CDMA might get outsold by a modern phone with LTE on America's best LTE network?
The Droid Razr Max is their number one selling phone, and then the Galaxy Nexus, number three, with the iPhone right smack dab in the middle. Mm. That's advertising for you, and that kind of backs up. We were talking before the show about Microsoft and the unhappy, potentially unhappy Microsoft phone buyers, particularly Lumia 900 buyers, because they have a very, very, very nice phone that won't run the next version of Microsoft's phone OS, Microsoft announced last week. And the contention was by the panel, nobody knows, nobody cares. And I think this proves you're right. Mm-hmm. If people are buying the Droid Razr Max.
Now, is that sales within Verizon stores or sales overall? Because that's I think is if that's true, then that's a
retail outlets.
Okay, and all retail outlets, including Apple stores,
Verizon retail outlets.
Yeah, see, if you're coming into the Verizon store, you really aren't mind locked into any specific model of phone.
Good point.
I think people who want an iPhone, their first impulse is not I'm going to go to a specific carrier store. Their first impulse is I'm going to the mall. I'm going to the Apple store.
Good point. If it doesn't include Apple store sales, there's a big chunk missing, isn't there?
That said, the latest figures that I've seen was something like an 18 percentage point lead adoption for usage of Android devices over iOS devices in the U.S. So it's not as though iOS and Android are the iPhone and Android phones are kind of neck and neck and chasing for the top spot. People are for whatever reason, be it marketing, be it choice, be it features or whatever, people are buying more Android phones than are using more Android phones than iOS. But yeah, I think it's interesting to tell the difference between what you buy at an Apple store versus a carrier store.
Well, and also as Andy and I have been talking, the Galaxy S3, that which just came out and so isn't in those numbers yet, that's going to be a very challenging phone, especially since it's sold on all four carriers. It's thinner, bigger screen, better screen in some ways than the iPhone 4S. This is going to be a very compelling Android phone, and I suspect that when you add this number in, that's going to be a big number.
Yeah. It's going to be a challenging phone until this fall, though, right? Don't misunderstand me. I'm not bashing the phone. I don't have one. You and Andy do. I'm not saying it's not a good phone, but when they release the next iPhone, I mean,
I agree.
I mean, as was just pointed out, we're in the middle of the cycle right now. We're sort of in the lull.
Right. And everybody knows, I think everybody who's paying attention knows there's a new iPhone coming. I mean,
and Android is competitive this year. I mean, the HTC One X is a fantastic
beautiful phone.
Too. It's not a singular Android phone anymore.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to tell you why I'm not buying the next iPhone in just a minute. We're going to take a break right now. Great panel with us. Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times. Couldn't do this show without Andy. Alex Lindsay is on assignment. This is like Where's Waldo? Where's Alex this time?
London still.
He seems to have got stuck in London.
Yeah.
Also with us for the first time, and really glad to have him from iMore.com, Renee Ritchie, editor-in-chief. Good to have you. And to be here. Ken Ray, of course, Mac OS Ken. Always, what a great, you know, this is a nice team. I like this panel. This is fun. We're having fun. And I'm very curious what y'all have to say about the 19-pin connector. But first, a word from Carbonite. I got to say, whatever you carry, whatever you use, backup is everything. You know, I know nobody wants to think about losing a laptop. Nobody wants to think about a hard drive failing or fire or flood or theft or tsunami. But these things happen. And if your data is not protected, something much worse than losing the hardware can happen. You can lose your data. Think about what's on your hard drive, the pictures of your child being born, your wedding, your vacation, your financial records, your emails. There's so much stuff now. My life is on my hard drive. That's why I use Carbonite. Make sure everything is backed up automatically, continuously, securely. You can even make it so private that even Carbonite can't open. They have a complete strong encryption system that only you have the keys. Of course, SSL whenever you're connected to the internet. And that's nice because it means Carbonite's backing up whenever you're online, even at an insecure Wi-Fi hotspot. Carbonite's secure, Carbonite's protected, and Carbonite's backing up. When you make changes, they're backed up instantly. I want you to check it out. You can do it for free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card. You just need the offer code MACBREAK, carbonite.com. Promo code MACBREAK or offer code MACBREAK. And if you try it for 2 weeks and you like it, you could buy it for as little as $59 a year for each computer. For everything, all your personal data on a computer for $59, less than $5 a month. And we're going to give you 2 free months if you use the offer code MACBREAK, 14 months for the price of 12. Secure, automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your Mac or, of course, for your PC too. In fact, if you have a PC in businesses, they've got great business plans and external drives and so forth for the PC users. That's carbonite.com. Please use our offer code MACBREAK so that you get that special 2-month free deal when you buy. I am not going to buy. I'm going to say it now. You guys have to talk me off the ledge. Apple, I think we all agree now. We've seen the pictures. We've seen the prototypes. A new connector, no more 30-pin connector. A 19-pin mini connector, which will mean that I have a $200 radio that the dock of the phone, 30-pin dock. I have a Sonos dock. I have 830-pin cables. I have all of this stuff.
It'll be a $30 adapter for you, Leo.
Well, now this is an interesting question. At first I thought, it's an easy thing to do. Apple just makes a little thing that snaps on the bottom, that turns the 19-pin into 30-pin, and it adds maybe half an inch to the height. I thought, that's easy. And guess what? I guarantee you Apple won't do that.
Oh, but someone will license the connector to
somebody
do that.
Somebody will do it.
There'll be enough. And I have to say, I'm a little bit ambivalent here. Number one, Apple can't maintain the same connector forever just to make sure that your 3-year-old car connector continues to work.
But I can't get a new car because my phone connector changed.
Oh, you got sweetheart deals with Ford. Oh, for goodness sake. You can have Mustangs and Apple colors. In
Ford was smart enough not to put a... there are cars and head ends that have 30-pin connectors, but Ford just has a USB port. So that's smart, right?
I mean, just last week, I finally did the work on my 10-year-old car, so I don't have to use a cassette adapter anymore. And I was in exactly the same position you were in, where do I do the next step, which is to hardwire in a dock connector? But I knew that no, I shouldn't do that yet, just until I find out. I mean, you can't expect Apple to always maintain compatibility with previous models. At the same note, though. Apple, when they introduced this, they had damn well better make it clear that there's a productive, practical, functional reason why they made this change. Because if it's just a video of Johnny Ive making his explaining hands, going, and that way we have a smaller hole, nothing blemishes.
You know he's going to say that.
If it's purely a design decision. Apple did a stupid, stupid thing. So,
I believe iMore actually broke this story back in February, and I'll put the link here. And we checked into it a lot before we posted it because it was, again, I did not believe it at the time. And we got a really good story back. And the first part is that they are desperate for space in the new iPhone. It's the same reason they're looking at nano SIMs and other space-saving technologies. They need to cram an LTE radio in there. They need to cram a much bigger battery, and they don't have the size of an iPad to do it in. So space is at a super premium. And at the same time, they're moving into wireless technologies. They have AirPlay. They have Wi-Fi sync now. So they don't believe that the dock connector is as useful to as many people. And in a typical Apple move where they want to drag us kicking and screaming into the future, they believe that by doing this, we'll get to the Wi-Fi disconnected model faster.
See, that points to another thing that would annoy me. Like, this is the Galaxy S, the S3 versus the iPhone.
Yeah.
And you know what? When I switch back to, I've been using this for like almost an entire week just to get used to it and so I can write my review. And when I switch back to this, the iPhone looks small. It looks dinky. It looks inadequate. I like the extra room I have for touch typing. I like the extra room I have for reading things. Why would Apple be so absolutely violently opposed to making a phone that's a little bit larger just for the if they're at the point where they have to redefine a dock connector just to have an extra little bit amount of space to put more chips in there, isn't that an indication that maybe you should consider listening to like millions and millions of users who have said, who've had the option of who basically drove smaller Android handsets out of the market and switched to these instead?
There are three for the iPhone 5 now, there's three prototypes. One is 3.5 inches, which is the same as the current size.
Yeah.
Two of them are 4 inches. The one of the 4 inches is 16:9. So they don't want to make it wider because they want to maintain an easy one-handed use model. They want to be able to touch all areas of the screen with your thumb if you're holding it in one size. And because of the way the antenna is built, there's not a lot of room sideways. So they're going to go up. And it won't be much bigger, and it will still require a lot of battery and a lot of LTE radio. It looks like they're not going to go any bigger than 4 inches. And Apple's a really agile company. There's the famous story of Steve Jobs changing the screen from plastic to glass in 3 weeks. So they can decide up until July when they're going to go to. But
so one of the things that lends that story credibility is that these very, I mean, they couldn't be faked, these videos of the case with a little 19-pin connector on it.
But they're one of the prototypes. They're not. They haven't chosen yet.
Right. Exactly. So I just want to say, by the way, Dan Dirks has created a straw poll. strawpoll.me/694. Will Leo buy the new iPhone?
99% yes.
I am not going to buy the new. Let's see. You could not cast your vote. Oh, I've already voted on the poll, apparently.
That was me. I voted.
Chad voted.
I used up our IP address, but you can click results to see.
Let's see. Yeah. See, it's pretty.
This is in Chicago. You can only vote once.
Yeah, of course I'm going to buy the new iPhone, but I'm not going to be happy about it.
You're going to buy it in protest?
Well, I'm just saying, a good example, this company called Renew, I reviewed the clock. It's a sleep clock, and it's nice. You can put the iPad or the iPhone on the 30-pin connector. By the way, what about the iPad? Are they going to do that to the iPad next year, too?
All future iOS products will have the micro dock or mini dock, whatever they call it.
So this stupid clock that was $200, fortunately, I didn't buy it.
But the magic dock.
The magic.
Oh, yeah.
It just works.
You're welcome, customers. We listen to you.
I don't know the last time I actually used the dock on my iPhone. I mean, I think when I have to install a beta from a developer who is not using TestFlight, I do it, or the first time there's a beta. But after that, everything now is over the air or AirPlay or Wi-Fi sync. It's just very easy now.
Yeah, the biggest drag to me is charging. I mean, I've had so many iPads and iPhones and iPods at this point. And I haven't had as many as a lot of people I know, but I've had so many that I'm almost never without a way to charge. And that'll change with the next iPhone, I guess. I'll have one cord that I'll be able to do that with that it comes with. Or I could buy more for $30.
Does Apple sell an adapter? I mean, I guess they could make a small adapter that would snap on.
Yeah, and I'm sure I am sure that someone's going to make sort of an iPhone case that, in addition to giving you, Totoro on the back of it, also gives you, transmogrifies the old style dock connector to the new style dock connector. It's a third party. Apple once again is good in that they're providing third-party opportunities for other upstart startups to start making profits off of iPhone stuff.
Right.
But
ecosystem.
I mean, yeah, exactly. You're getting it right. I should really try. I'm the opposite. I almost never Wi-Fi sync. The only time I do it is when I know that there's a fresh podcast or I know that there's something brand new that I want to get. I'm away from my desktop. And the reason why I don't do that is because when I tried doing Wi-Fi syncing for the first week and a half, so many inconsistencies popped up. So many times where I thought something was on there but wasn't. And I knew that if I actually take out the cable and actually connect it, then that's the only way that I know that this data is going to be on there when I expect it to be. So maybe I should try it again. But it was the ultimate bad user experience where you stop using a feature because it failed to work the first three times that you expected it to work.
Yeah. It's a Hobson's choice because iTunes desktop will do that to you anyway.
Yeah, everything got so much more reliable once I turned off iCloud syncing and turned off iTunes Match and simply said, let's do the same stupid way of copper pushing electrons from iTunes directly to the phone. Only then and only then was I able to predict when a song or a podcast would actually appear on the phone as I directed it to.
I was the opposite. And it's funny, New Year's Day, I got hit by a firework, which is an odd story, but it hit mostly my phone.
Jesus.
And it turned the screen into like sandpaper.
The phone saved your life, Renee.
The phone saved. I could have been burning. I could still be burning.
Holy cow.
But it turned the screen into sandpaper. And I went to the Apple store and I was ready to pay whatever the $200 is to replace it. And they did it as a warranty exchange. And they just gave me a stern lecture about taking better care of my Apple products.
You got hit by a firework. I don't think you could have avoided that.
I typed in my iCloud password and I left the store with my iPhone. It was bit for bit identical to what I'd walked in off. And that's a feature that none of their competitors are providing. So that's when I went all in on iCloud.
You can mostly do that with Android. They've had that for a while.
But there's no Google store to walk into to do it. To swap out the phone.
True. That's absolutely true.
No, it is one of the nice things about getting a new Android phone. You log into your Google account and all the apps even copy onto it. It's kind of a nice feature. It won't be a Thunderbolt 19-pin port, would it? There's no reason to do that.
It can't. It's not a PCI architecture.
So okay. They can't. The hardware doesn't support it. I'm sure they're going to do this. We had Ryan Block on Twit on Sunday. It was a good Twit, by the way, if you didn't hear it. We had Padre SJ, Father Robert Ballister, and Larry Maggot, and Ryan. You know, Ryan's with Gadget. And he said, no, it's time. He says, that 30-pin connector, what is it, 10 years old? It's time. It's too big. It wastes space. You got to update it, and you just got to bite the bullet. And if you're Apple's good at this. They just bite the bullet, and they make the change. And Apple fanboys, like me, go, yes, master. Whatever you say, master. What is thy will? I'll buy it.
I'm already in line today for the new Mini Connector. First one with the unboxing video on the new Mini USB to dock connector.
You know I'll buy it. Actually, it's going to be
$1,500.
If it weren't for the Galaxy S3, it would be a no-brainer. But at this point, I've been carrying the Galaxy instead of the iPhone.
I'm not with you. I'm not right up there with you yet. I'll say that if there's a new, if Apple ever did something with the iPhone that steamed me sufficiently, part of my decision on whether to upgrade to the next iPhone or not would be affected by the fact that I know that there are plenty of Android handsets out there that will make me just as happy.
Exactly. And that's why Apple has to be a little more careful than in the past. Now, here's something I think will make part of the decision for me. And maybe, Renee, you know this. Will there be NFC in the new iPhone?
I have heard there might be NFC. I haven't seen any real solid information on it. But if you look at what Apple did at WWDC, especially with Passbook, Passbook is one of those wonderful abstracted APIs that right now has the QR codes, but could very easily be swapped in for RFID, NFC. And Apple, I think one of the large reasons for the App Store success was the iTunes cash register, because they could take credit cards in so many countries around the world. Plugging those things together seems like an obvious move for Apple.
I like NFC. I've got NFC in some of my Android phones. We even have Samsung sells these for, they're expensive, $3 a pop, little NFC stickers. We have one in the door when you walk in. And as you walk in, I can tap my phone on the sticker and it checks me in on Foursquare. And I can see the real value of NFC. It's pretty apparent, but I don't think it can succeed if you don't get Apple along for the ride, right?
Yeah. I mean, someone's trying to figure out a way to make it actually integrate into people's lives. I was I happened to have had lunch a few days ago with someone else who had an S3, and so this was our first opportunity to actually try these features that used NFC chips to directly send like a URL from a web page. So if I'm telling you, hey, this is a really good web page, tap, and it hits on the other guy's phone. It took us about 5 minutes of looking like such dorks holding our Wonder Twin Power phones. To try, okay, is it working now? No, wait, it's telling me to, okay, wait, hang on, wait, okay, don't let go yet. If a company does it as simply as just simply tap, oh, I've held this in a buffer, do you really want to accept it or not? Great. Do you want to accept everything from this guy? Yep, great. If it works that easily, it'll be great. Otherwise, they're competing with the idea of just a share button that says email. Everybody knows what to do with the URL when it hits into an inbox. Everybody knows what to do with a photo when it hits into a box. Once you say it's simple to connect, boom. But then you have to take 7 steps to decide, okay, do you want to share this via Picasa? Do you want to share this via iCloud?
Yeah, early, though. I think when I can walk in, you know, I use Square card case. I guess they call it pay with Square now. There's a coffee shop down. Very few people do it. But when they do it, it's so cool because I walk into the coffee shop.
If stores that I – if like Chipotle used Apple store payment system as a form of payment – I would be using that all the time.
Exactly.
Not only because I feel so much more secure than handing over my plastic, but also because I know that they would do it in such a way that I would – well, maybe the downside is that I would get a monthly chart of here's how much you spent on burritos last month.
Yep.
Here's the calorie count of all the burritos you ate over the past 3.5 weeks.
Well, that's what Square does. I mean, it emails you. It has a map. This is where you bought it. This is what you paid for. You have a button to tip the guy, although it's a little annoying because the smallest tip is $1. But I guess that's maybe
it could be done so well, especially if you were able to integrate it with Mint and other like online banking systems where every purchase that you make automatically goes in and is categorized because you already said, oh, Starbucks is entertainment an option button for this is. I would be all over that, but only I would not be one of the first 10,000 people to be all over that because the first 50,000 criminals would be the first ones to be all over that. And then that's when I would jump in after I realized that, okay, it's kind of safe.
Just don't lose
your phone.
Apple's
very good at that. I mean, they don't give you multitasking. They give you Pandora and TomTom and Skype, and they won't give us NFC. They'll give us Starbucks or Chipotle. But the only question for me is, will it be like FaceTime or a Siri where Apple introduces this, you know, George Jetson technology we've been waiting for, and it takes the market a long time to actually make it a mainstream product.
Yeah. Well, if anybody can push it over the top, it's Apple. And that's why I'd love to see it in the new iPhone. I think that then you have, you know, this, you've got an installed base, a massive installed base. You've got somebody really working on making it easy to use. I think merchants jump on the bandwagon then, and I think it snowballs. And I think if Apple doesn't do it, it probably is stillborn. I think it just stops. And so it really is, it's Apple's market to make at this point.
Well, I think that you're right. I think that's exactly how they would do it. They wouldn't do it as they wouldn't do it to compete with MasterCard or Visa. They would do it by saying now your Apple ID works in Starbucks. Now your Apple ID works in
your passcode
Chipotle.
App puts up your coupon when you walk in the store.
Right. And then the big deal would be the first time they say, and now your password works in JCPenney. And then now it works in Target. Right. And JCPenney would probably obviously be the first one to go because they have an in there at the company. But the first time it would be, yeah.
I think this is very, very interesting, and I hope Apple does support it because I think it will change everything. And you won't be carrying a wallet. I mean, that's why they did the Passbook. That's why they did
Passkit.
Right?
Yeah, and they have a whole API stack, Passkit, behind it. And it looks really like a typical Apple thing. It's really well abstracted and thought out. And I think they'll have partners at first, the same way they announced at WWDC, and then it'll roll out from there.
And if they do, folks, buy Apple stock because that's a license to make money. I mean, that's just if you take one penny, it's billions. It's instant.
maybe we'll get 30% off of every burrito that I buy.
They'll try. If they thought they could get away with it, they would. Hey, we're giving you 70%, Chipotle.
We're rolling in burrito bucks.
We're bringing you in new business and new awareness. All you have to do is make sure that every one of your burritos is put not in one of those red plastic baskets, but inside a box of sand.
We want to improve the experience for your users.
All we ask is that you stay out of our way.
Yes.
Last story, then we're going to get to our picks of the week. Judge Posner, with prejudice, throws out Apple's lawsuit against Motorola. With prejudice. Is it Judge Posner or is it Apple that is in the wrong? Foss Patents' Florian Mueller says Apple's ripoff claims are right. Judge Posner's decision doesn't prove there was no ripoff. He just can't see that the patents were shown to him and the related infringement allegations and damages substantiated a ripoff of the illegal kind. So is it Posner's mistake?
It's, I mean, they just, Apple didn't show, Apple's lawyers did not present compelling damages
bad
to the
job.
Judge.
Okay.
Yeah. Or the patents just weren't good enough to have compelling damages. I mean, you can legally rip somebody off, illegally rip somebody off.
Right.
Apple didn't prove that it was an illegal ripoff.
But there is no appeal. Posner's, well, although Mueller says there is 100% certainty of appeal. I thought because he ruled with prejudice, there wasn't going to be an appeal.
No, they can appeal to a higher court. They can't come back to his court.
Got it.
Yeah, I think his quote was something like, it would be stupid of me to throw this case out and give you guys a chance to come back and argue the same arguments again.
Right.
So, yeah, you take it somewhere else. It's not selling here.
Interesting.
I got the feeling he was just sick of it, which, you know, I really enjoyed reading how he's been writing about it lately, or how he's been talking
about
it lately.
He was cranky.
Well, in a funny kind of way. And really, Leo, aren't we all cranky with the IP lawsuit to this point? I mean, I know they're probably maybe necessary or something. I don't know. I'm tired of them.
Yep.
So, you know, if I had a hammer, sure, I'd hammer in the morning. But if I had a hammer and a robe, you know, I'd probably do the same thing. Just because, come on, especially with this one, because he's right. Who can prove damages exactly?
Right.
In this case, I loved what he said to Motorola. Motorola was trying to block Apple from, aren't they? And this is actually still going before the ITC. They're trying to block import of the iPad and the iPhone because Apple is using patents that are standards essential.
Oh.
They have to use them if they're going to make the phones, and Motorola is trying to stop them from using them. And the judge, Posner, Mr. Richard, let's say, I was like, come on, guys, you can't do that. And you know you can't do that. This is why I'm sick of the lot of you. Get out, get out, get out.
Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. Get out of my court. That's why being a judge is a good job. But they have to work so hard, and the stress. I just think they're underpaid.
Think they are?
Like Apple Store employees.
Next, Apple Store.
Next Sunday in an all-new New York Times.
Federal judges. Poor, underpaid, overworked federal judges. We're going to take a break at our iOS tip, our Lion tip, our tips, our picks, and all that stuff. I don't know. I'm sure Chad told you, Ken and Renee, that you've got to pony up at this point. So get ready. Sure. Just pick something, anything. Don't worry about if we've done it before, because nobody listens to every show. So anything's new if it's new to you. But first, a word from our friends at Ford Motor Company. I heard a sentence. I was at a Ford event last week, and I heard a sentence. I think it was from Ford CTO, or it might have been from Prasad, the guy opening the Silicon Valley Bureau there, that just made something click. They said, the car is a platform. We see the car as a platform, like iOS is a platform, like Windows is a platform. Something, we give you the tools, we give you the basics, we give you the sensors, we give you, you know, the platform, and then they want developers to develop for the platform. And I was so inspired by that. It's such a great way to think about what they're up to. They said, we don't know. Car is a durable good. You're going to have it for years. We don't know how you want to use it in a few years. So what we do, and we don't know how we want to use it even. So what we do is we build in capabilities and then give you an API, they call it AppLink, that lets you, the developer, write stuff for it. I think this is just great. If you go to Ford.com/technology, you can see what Ford is up to with their technology platform. This is another thing. I mean, here's a car company that has a page about their technology. There's pages. There's so much to talk about. Take a look at the My Ford Mobile app, for instance, for their electric vehicles. This fantastic 2012 Ford Focus. Here's the deal. So you go to your EV-certified Ford dealer, bring your phone, because you could put the app on there, and then it tells you things like, this as you're driving, the state of charge. When you've got it in the garage, the app will tell you how far charged the battery is. You can even press a button and say, only charge at the lowest possible prices. And the phone talks to the utility company and finds out what the best charging times are and sets the charging time for that time to save you money. You can use the phone to find charging stations as you drive around to tell you the most eco-friendly route, the route that'll save you money. Look how beautiful this is. Now, by the way, this is so cool because this is a virtual screen, right? I don't know. The dial might be physical, but these are all virtual and programmable, and they can change. Just really sweet stuff. This is a state of the art. Yeah, the 4.2 inch LCD instrument cluster screens on either side of the speedometer in this 2012 Ford Focus that tell you everything you need to know. And they even have some little gamification. They have a My Ford Mobile website where you can see how much CO2 you've saved by driving your 2012 Ford Focus electric. And then who's the leader? They have leaderboards. I love this. Encouraging us to save money and drive more efficiently. My Ford Mobile app is available on Android, BlackBerry, and of course iPhone. And it's just one of many ways Ford is making a state-of-the-art statement in technology. They just opened their Silicon Valley bureau. They're reaching out to developers. It is a platform. That's just exactly the way to look at it. You'll never think of cars the same way again. And next year, the 2013 Ford Fusion Energy plug-in hybrid. I tell you. All right. Thank you, Ford, for your support, by the way, of all of our shows here at TWiT. And let me just say thank you, Apple. As I've been looking at this iPod or a podcasting app, this is going to be huge for podcasts. I think we'll see an immediate bump in download numbers just because we are featured. And by the way, folks, do me a favor. If you like our shows, subscribe in the podcasting app. And kind of support us, because I think that the leader, one of the things that we suffer from a little bit as older podcasts, we don't get into the top, lists because of the catalog, because these are based on, who's been subscribing the most recently. And I think most of you subscribe.
Momentum based.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a billboard, a magazine. It's, these are the charts. So I'd like to get on the charts. So if you're downloading the app, subscribe. And somebody said, oh, Leo's not going to like this. It's got a 30-second skip in it. Well, that's fine. What am I going to do? There's also got a 10-second rewind. So, I love the, I guess it is skeuomorphism of the tape reels. I just love it.
I downloaded the iPhone version of it during the show, and I was really pleased that as soon as you launch it for the first time, it imports all of your existing podcast for podcast subscriptions from the Music Player app. So I was like, somebody thought about me.
That was the part that I was saying looked kind of Metro at first glance.
Right.
Yeah.
It looked like the tiles at first glance. But yeah, that really is neat, because there are podcasts that I've sort of stopped listening to just because I haven't been syncing with my computer as much. And so when I think about it, I'll go and download another one. But now The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Love that. Yeah.
I'm now subscribed to it on my phone, which means my Bugle listening will go back up exponentionally.
Yeah, I think that should help us.
TV channel. Gonna be fantastic on an iPad. All the videos will be fantastic.
Yeah, get all our videos on the. That's what you do. Subscribe to the videos on the iPad and subscribe to the audio on your iPhone. That's all I ask.
Best of both worlds
for each and every show that we do, and make sure you listen and watch each and every one. Thank you.
And leave them all ratings, 5 stars or higher.
No, I think this is good.
Can I second that for this other show?
MacOSKen.com. Yeah, subscribe, listen. True. Yeah, no, I think Ken, you agree. This is a huge step forward for podcasting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, when was the last time? The last time I remember there being big attention on podcasting as a whole was when CBS launched KYOU Radio in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, remember that? Yeah.
Quietly killed about a year ago, I think. Well, no, they killed it as a broadcast thing like 2 or 3 years ago. They finally killed their web stream about a year ago.
It was all podcasts radio.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys know this, but iTunes, we have 10 shows on iTunes now, and the iTunes team is fantastic. They will do everything they can to feature you, to get artist pages set up, to get special event pages set up. They're doing a lot to help us.
No, they reach out to us all the time, and we have a great relationship. They're really nice guys, and they do. Yeah. I agree with you 100%.
I don't want to sound like I've been complaining about how they've been, because I've been lucky enough to be featured, a few times as well. And they've been really great. With what they've had, it is neat to see something new. It's neat to see something that, is going to draw more attention to podcasts, because, for the people who are already podcasters and for the people who are already into podcasting, it's been it's been a good place to go. But now, I mean, this is the first thing that's going to kick a bunch of people in that direction, which is kind of funny because, I mean, what it's going towards is actually making it less accessible in some ways automatically, because from all the reports, it's coming out of iOS 6, iTunes in iOS 6. So it's not going to be available for everyone automatically the way it is now, and yet it's going to be more prevalent, at least over the next month or so, as people, you know, get hip to the fact that Apple's got a new app out there for it.
Well, we're going to push it like crazy.
I will also push it like crazy.
Hopefully we'll get a nice big iBook style, please download this now, pop up at some point.
Ooh, wouldn't that be nice? Anyway, let's get our picks of the week, starting with Andy. That'll be our iOS tip. Get the podcast app. Unless, Andy, you have one you'd like to do, a Lion tip you'd like to do, or an OS 10 tip you can give us our
pick. No, I had a Lion tip last week we didn't do, and also one this week.
Well, let's do it.
Well, it's good to have one on deck for, like, I'm ready for next week.
Well, do you want to do one now?
Okay, I'll do a simple one now then.
I got one too. I'll do one if you don't want to do one.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm in put up or shut up mode. But this is a really cool, really simple one that kind of makes you sort of smack your head and say, why didn't I figure out this before? You see the row of really cool dedicated function keys on the top of your keyboard for getting, you know, for adjusting the volume, for adjusting the screen brightness, for getting into Launchpad, Expose, and dashboard, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, you know that there are also settings pages for those inside System Prefs.
Ooh.
What you probably didn't know is that if you hold down the Option key on the keyboard, then touch that Function key, it will take you immediately to the System Prefs for that feature.
No.
So if you hit, if you hold down the Option key and type one of the volume keys, that'll take you into the sound settings. If you hold down the Option key and hit one of the brightness things, it'll take you immediately to the screen settings. Even the keyboard brightness key will take you to immediately to the keyboard settings.
Andy! Yeah.
I got this just by sort of like, it just, I don't know why it just popped into my head like one day. I wonder what happens if you hold down the Option key and type these, like, oh my God, that's actually very clever of them. Why didn't I know about this?
Oh my gosh. I echo M. Lewis in our chat room. A tip of the hat, sir. Well played.
Like,
I had no idea. That's going to save me so much time. So if we want to go, for instance, to the display control panel, instead of clicking around, I just press Option and the brightness key. There's a display control panel. Mm-hmm. Option and Expose key gives me the Expose settings, the mission control settings. Keyboard light gives me the keyboard settings. Boy, this is great. Playback or audio gives me the sound control. That's nice.
Mm.
Okay, thank you. You win. I'm not going to show mine.
Go ahead.
No, actually, for those of you who have Retina displays, and I know that's a tiny fraction, but one of the first things you notice immediately is my wallpaper looks crappy. Apple does have some, you know, standards, but I don't like to use the Apple wallpaper. I always have some nature scenes and stuff, and all of the stuff was old. So I found a website, highly recommended, called Interfacelift. And I'm sure you all know about it, interfacelift.com. And they have, they're very smart, 2880 by 1800 wallpapers that are gorgeous. And it's free to download. They do have a downloader, which I did, which I think is worth for a penny a page. And in this case, they now have 278 Retina quality wallpapers. They also have other sizes. But if you want to do the bulk download service, it's a penny, so it'd be $2.78 to get all of them. And I did that because it was really, really worth it. They have great stuff in every resolution too, and it's sorted by resolution, and that's nice. That's really nice. So, interfacelift.com, free if you want to do it one by one, onesie Tuesday. Now though, there's more new ones all the time, so I have to download more of them. All right, now your pick of the week, Mr. Rene Ritchie.
My pick is from AppCubby, David Barnard, and it's called Launch Center Pro. It's a new version of the Launch Center app he had out previously, but I mean, this really puts the pro in pro. Basically, with iOS, you can launch apps. The entire reason we have the home screen and no widgets and no nothing else, basically, is because Apple wants you not to hang around and play in the home screen, but go into apps.
Live in apps.
And what David did is he put together this Launch Center Pro, and you can launch actions. So you can hit a button and launch a Google search based on your clipboard, or you can launch an action into OmniFocus, or you can launch a tweet. And we didn't get any sort of contracts or intents with iOS 6, so there's still no inter-app communication. But there are these URL schemes, so apps can take information from a URL, and he's busy cataloging the bejesus out of all these URLs and adding them into Launch Center Pro. So any app that surfaces these, he can grab them, and you can just directly do things in those apps right from Launch Center. And it's in my dock now, and I used it all through WWDC, and it saved me a tremendous amount of time and aggravation.
Very nice. How much is that? $299.
It is $299, yes, $299. And well worth it.
App Cubby Launch Center Pro. Ken Ray, got a pick for us?
I'm going to revisit one that you guys actually did about a year ago, and I know because I was on the show where you and Don did it. I'm going back to Spotify, and the reason I'm doing that is because it was really cute. They put out an iOS update this week, and there was a joke at the bottom of the iOS update. It was fixes this, fixes this, fixes this, and then the last one was fiction. This update allergic to nuts. And I thought that was funny.
I love it.
And so I posted that, just a screenshot of that on Instagram, and said, you know, I think there it is. This version is allergic to nuts. And I thought, you know, I posted that because I thought it was funny. And somebody wrote to me and said, okay, is this really better than iTunes Match? And it occurred to me that there are people who don't know the difference between the two. So just sort of a reintroduction. Spotify is a subscription music service. You don't have to pay, but that has ads. You can pay $4.99 and then you get it ad free, and you pay $9.99, I think, a month, and you get it on portable devices. So like I've got it on my iPad and on my iPhone.
I pay for it. It's well worth it. They've also added a radio feature now to the iOS version, which is great.
They've added the radio feature, and then on the desktop side, I'm really a fan of the social side of it, which when you and Don McAllister were talking about it last year, I was kind of like, well, I don't really care. But it turns out I really do enjoy that. I'm liking, you know, seeing what my friends are playing and discovering music through some of the stuff that they do. They've also added their App Store section in the past year. It doesn't cost anything. Most of the apps I'm not that big a fan of, but there's one that I love called, I believe it's, oh, is it? It might be TuneWiki. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think
basically,
it is.
When you start a song,
right?
You start a song, you click on the TuneWiki app, and it plays for you as long as the publisher has not ripped them down, which does happen occasionally. But it runs the lyrics right along with the song as it's going, so you can use it as sort of a cheap karaoke machine if you want to, or you can finally understand, you know, what they're saying at that one part that you just always make up noise when that part of the song comes along. So that's honestly one of the apps that I use most because I keep music playing while I'm writing.
I love Spotify. In fact, I use it on my Sonos, but you could use it with AirPlay with your Apple TV as well.
Which I do.
Yeah. No, it's great. Spotify is a great music service, and the radio is kind of Pandora like. So that's pretty cool. Andy, your pick of the week.
Mine is a kind of esoteric little camera app that I really, really like. It's called Hueless, H-U-E-L-E-S-S, $1.99. And what it is, I've got it on the screen back behind me. It is a exclusively black and white camera app. Huh. And you think, oh, well, what's the point of that? Because every app that I have has a special cute Instagram-like black and white photo mode. Well, the difference is that this actually shows you the world in black and white. And if you're interested in black and white photography, you appreciate that part of it is understanding how good or how different an image looks when you strip out the color. So you frame and you compose an image a little bit differently. You see the scene a little bit differently when you see it black and white. And the other really cool thing, I'm going to zoom in so you can see the effects. People of a certain age who learned how to photograph in black and white also learned that there's like sort of a standard suite of filters, actual physical filters that have cool effects. So this actually will mimic the effect of having red, green, and blue, red, green, and yellow filters. So here's the same image that I had like on the background right there, just to show you the difference. Right now, there's no filter applied. And so now that's what that looks like with a red filter. And then if I change that to a green filter, the tones are a lot different. If I change now to a blue filter, it becomes completely different. Wow. So you can do things like if you want to, how many times have you taken a picture of a sky like an hour before there's a thunderstorm and you think, oh my God, such beautiful, like Ten Commandments style Wrath of God type clouds, and then you take a picture of it with your regular camera. Ooh, that just doesn't look nearly as cool. Well, you can drop in a filter that makes the clouds wider and makes the blues of the sky almost like black as night, and so you get immense contrast between the two. You can use oftentimes a filter to sort of soften tones and skin if you want to get that sort of Herb Ritz effect when you're taking a picture of somebody. It's a fun thing to play around with. If you get into the mindset of taking pictures in black and white, you'll find yourself thinking, hey, that kind of might be a good scene. I wonder what it looked like in black and white. And then you realize, oh, it looks great in black and white. I wonder what it would look like with a green filter applied that would make the leaves look really, really different in this scene. Oh, wow, it looks really cool. Let's take that picture too. So it's $199. It sort of underscores that there's no one really great camera app for the iPhone. It's more like you will have sort of a little gun belt of apps, each of which does one really cool thing that you'll cycle through. But if you keep remembering that you have a cool black and white camera somewhere on that gun belt, you'll probably wind up using it a bit.
Thank you, Andy. Very nice. I want to show something that maybe you guys remember as Greplin, which was about the worst name for an app ever. It's an iPhone app. They've renamed it and reversioned it, and it really is actually pretty spectacular. It's free. It's called Q-C-U-E. Know What's Next. Now, you're not going to like this if you're one of those people who says, I don't want to upload my contact information to the cloud or whatever. I don't care about privacy. So I put Q on my iPhone. And what it does is you give it email, you give it your LinkedIn, your Facebook, everything. I don't know if you might have to zoom in on this one. And then it makes up a page for you each day. You see, this is the 26th, so it's building the page from all of my contacts, from my calendars and everything, of what I'm doing. It says, up next, Twit Photo. Oh, gosh, we better hurry up. It shows, and if I say who scheduled that meeting, for instance, I can tap that, and I can see who scheduled a meeting, and I can if that meeting's been canceled, I can text. It's got my texts in there. It crashed. It's got a lot of phone numbers, which I'm now showing, so I probably shouldn't do that. It builds. Let me show the screenshots from the app page. That's probably a better idea. But this is all live. So if you're going to be late for a meeting, for instance, you can click the name of the organizer and send them a text. You see, if an event is a flight, for instance, they'll show you the confirmation code. It gives you a lot of information. It's kind of like a calendar on steroids. And it lets you interface between your contacts, your calendars, and everything that's going on. It's really sweet. It's really kind of cool. It's called Q, and it's free. It does. It syncs with iCal. It syncs with all of you. You tell it what you want to sync with. It's free for $4.99 a month or $50 a year. You can have it sync with more professional stuff like LinkedIn. But the free thing is very, very capable. Facebook, Twitter. It's really kind of a neat app. Try it. Do the free thing and see if you like it. It's formerly called Greplin. It's now called Q. C-U-E, D-Mix, C-U-E. And, it'll let me send the chat room a message when I know I'm going to be late. That's right. I wish I could. If that would be kind of cool. What I need is an email address to the chat room. I would do that. Get me one of these. By the way, these are some of the Interface Lift desktop images. It just looks so good. I love my Retina display. I can't put it down. I go to bed with it at night.
Tell it all your secrets.
I do.
Do each other's hair.
Are you happy with the 8 gig model, Leo? Because I've been waiting for this.
Yeah, I got
gig.
The base model. I got the 8 gig. I got 256 gig hard drive. I didn't pay more than the base model. And it's fast. I was showing before the show. I was showing benchmarks for the hard drive. Spectacular. Very fast. Luscious. And not too. People are worried about it being hot. It's not hot. I don't. You know, somebody said, "Oh, it's too heavy." It's not that heavy. Come on. What, do we turn into a bunch of panty waist? It's only 4.5 pounds.
Be a man. Pick up your MacBook.
Be a man. Get over it.
Well, if we're panty waist, we used to be milk toast. So that's
right.
An upgrade.
We've gotten better. Mr. Ken Ray does a podcast every day called macOS Ken at macosken.com. You must subscribe in the new iTunes Podcasts app and listen to him. And come back soon because you're great. I love having you on.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it. Great to see you. Same thing with Renee. Boy, you're fantastic. imore.com. Renee Ritchie, editor-in-chief there. imore.com. And you said you do podcasts too.
We do. And in fact, we have the 300th episode of our show tomorrow. So if you search for Mobile Nations, you'll find a whole lot
Fantastic.
Of them.
That's great. Congratulations on episode 300.
Thank you very much. And Leo, you gave us a bunch of advice on how to do it right at Macworld a couple years ago, and we implemented all of it, and it's been fantastic.
Stop telling people how to do this stuff. Anyway, great to have you, Renee. Please come back soon also.
Absolutely.
And we can't get rid of Andy Inaco. He's the star of the show at Chicago Sun-Times, Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. Mr. Inaco, always a pleasure.
Always a slice, Leo.
Thanks for being here. Thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly when Leo shows up on time at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. We welcome you into the audience. We're going to set up a new email. I think I want to set up tickets at twit.tv because that just makes more sense. I have you emailing my sister right now, but who's going to remember Eva at twit.tv? So tickets, but we'll set that up. But you don't have to get tickets. You just show up. It's just that way we'll have a chair for you. Otherwise, you're sitting on the floor. But do come, you know, being in the chat room or listening live, you could arrange your own beverage and seat as well. And that's 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Every Tuesday after the fact, we got audio and video for you. Just go and download it. We will do live coverage of Google I.O. tomorrow, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 Eastern time. If you want to find out what Google's up to, TNT coming up this afternoon with the latest tech news at 3 p.m. Pacific. But we're going to get ready right now for Twit Photo. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you next time. Now get back to work. Break time is over.
Yay. Bravo. Yes. Light, golf, golf, golf. Well.